Are you ready to talk Padres baseball?
We've got you covered.
Today's an off day for the Padres, and apparently an off day for Blooper as well, who figured he had Jesse and Bill yesterday, so just book Jesse and Bill again today. That's easy enough, right?
That's very simple. That's right. Like extreme. That is like sports 101. Like that's mind-blowing to me that people are confused by that.
Actually, the real way we got Bill Center in studio with Jesse Agler yet again is we promised him his choice of either a meatball or a Italian sub.
I like subs, period.
Yeah, no, who doesn't love a good sub?
Oh.
Now, broadcasting from the AMR studio, it's Padre Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, with your hosts, Jesse Agler and Bill Center.
Welcome to Padre Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, the rare off day inside of the homestand for the Padres. Yesterday, a 6-4 loss to the Diamondbacks. Tomorrow, the start of a two-game series against the Seattle Mariners. Little natural rivalry. Vetter Cup, interleague play. It's all going down tomorrow at Petco Park. We're inside the AMR studio. Padres were going for the sweep yesterday. They were unable to finish the sweep. We'll talk about yesterday's game. We'll also visit with our buddy Corey Brock of MLB.com. He wrote a profile, I think it is a good way to describe it,
right.
A profile of the interim manager, Pat Murphy, today on Padres.com. And it's funny because we were just talking about this yesterday and sort of the weird situation that Pat Murphy is in and how uncomfortable I imagine it to be at times. So Corey talked to Pat Murphy about it. He talked to players in the clubhouse, and he talked to Glenn Hoffman, the Padre third base coach, who was once himself an interim manager with the Dodgers back in the late 90s. So a really good piece by Corey. Check it out if you haven't already, and we'll talk to him about all of that coming up. We got some home run derby news. I got a replay rant. We got a lot to get to in the next hour or so, Bill. It's not going to be a boring social hour today.
Sounds like you got a lot on your plate.
Always, man. Always got a lot on my plate. And we're ready to shoot and go. Of course, you can be part of the show at home or on the road, wherever you are. You pick up your Twitter device of choice, be it phone, tablet, computer, and use the hashtag PadresSH. That's the hashtag PadresSH, and you can ask your questions, make your comments, and we run through those over the course of the show. You can also go to Padres.com/social hour to watch and listen to the show and chat with other fans. Let's talk about yesterday, though. Going for the sweep, you get the leadoff homer from Matt Kemp. End up losing 6-4, though. It felt for much of the afternoon like one of those not quite there games.
Right.
Every time they had a chance, they didn't cash it in, or when they did cash it in, they gave it back, and the Diamondbacks were sort of a step ahead.
Only five guys were on base against Despaña in his outing. On two of those were not very long. I mean, he gave up two home runs, a single, there was an error, and he hit a batter. And that was it.
Yeah, and they all scored. Yeah, it was kind of one of those things. There was a defensive letdown once again prior to an early three-run homer, an error by Will Middlebrooks over at third base that it sort of seems like we've seen it a million times. And it used to just be with Cashner, but now it's Despaña. And yeah, there's an error, and it sort of gets the ball rolling, but then that it doesn't stop there, and
right.
And that was kind of the issue again yesterday.
There are pitchers have to make pitches to get out of those innings. That's the whole thing. And last year they were great at that. Errors didn't. This year it just seems to be any miscue sort of turns into runs. And yeah, you blame a little of it is on the fielder, but an awful lot of it is also on the pitcher. You got to get out of those jams. You expect the fielders to pick you up at times, you have to pick the fielders up at times too.
That's exactly right. One of the big positive notes yesterday would certainly be Derek Norris. He hit not one but two homers. He did his part, a two-run shot in the fourth, a solo homer in his next at-bat. And take a listen to this. Pat Murphy after the game sort of talking about Derek Norris and everything that he means to this ball club.
He's a young player. You know, he's a fairly young player. And way he goes about his business every day, he wants to play 162 the way Kemp wants to play 162. That's what's so encouraging about this whole thing. They go through their ups and downs, but you know, Derek had been going through a little bit of a rut here offensively, and then all of a sudden breaks out today, and he works at his catching. He has a relationship with the pitching staff. It bodes well. He's a big part of this thing. He's a warrior. That's how he goes about it. All-star stuff, you know, I hope they all make it. You know, like I don't really focus on that stuff, but I certainly believe that I don't know that any of the other catchers' numbers. I don't know any of that other kind of stuff, but I know what he means to our team, And there's not too many players that mean more to their team behind the dish, I don't think. Couldn't be too many more players that mean more to their team than Derek means to us. So, yeah, let's get him in there.
Let's get him in there to the All-Star game. But yeah, I mean, he is, and we've picked up on this from a very early moment, even going back to spring training. He's one of those heart and soul of the team, you know, kind of guys.
Right.
Not to say he is the heart and soul of the team, because I don't think there's just one, but he's in that conversation without a doubt.
Plus, he's a catcher, and the catcher generally is your on-the-field leader. He's the only guy facing the other eight players. The catcher is the focal point. If he's a good player, he's definitely the focal point of any team, and that's one position where you look for leadership.
Absolutely. So that was a positive yesterday. Another positive would certainly be also in the home run category, Matt Kemp. Right out of the chute, that leadoff home run. And, in fact, not only was it a leadoff home run, it is also, Bill, our Supercuts cut of the game. How about that? Matt
All
Kemp
right.
providing us with a Supercuts cut of the game, a leadoff homer. I am rolling with Matt Kemp in the leadoff spot. That's me. I'm rolling with this, not only because of what he's able to do from a power standpoint like yesterday. I like it, and I don't know that there's a better option right now. So that's me. I'm keeping it going.
Well, that was my point in my five thoughts piece for today, is that Kemp, you shouldn't mess with him. I'm only getting tweets about when do they move him back to third or fourth, and I like the way it looks right now. I really like him at the top, and if he's hitting there and he's happy, that's fine. I'm for keeping him there.
Pat Murphy said last night, hey, or yesterday after the game, we'll kind of see how it goes. He didn't want to commit to anything long term, which
right.
I suppose is the prudent
Absolutely.
Thing to do. As the manager, you don't need to paint yourself into a corner. But, you know, for me, I'm not messing with this. Like, I'm letting it go at least into the All-Star break, honestly.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, you were talking, Pat mentioned it, Derek Norris had been in the slump. And, you know, he broke out. How many games do you have to see, good games, before you think a guy's snapped out of a slump or a tailspin?
That's an interesting question. I've never really thought about it. I would say you can get out of a slump. I would say two good games. Like if you put together back-to-back good games, like two hits or more in each game, I'm like, all right, he's not in a slump. He's had two-hit games. That's me. I don't know, but I've never really thought about
right.
it too much. What about you?
I look at like a set of five games. And
okay.
I'm not saying that he has to hit in each one, but if he's got good swings and he's putting stuff together, I say that if it lasts for five games, he's out of it.
Okay. That's asking a lot.
Yeah, but I'm not saying
now,
that it has to be stats.
But does the length of the slump have any impact on the length of that?
No.
Okay.
No.
So if he's in a long slump, do you want more than five games or a short slump? You're saying five games?
Well, I'm saying like, Matt Kemp. Let's take Matt Kemp. I think he's out of that long drought that he was in. He's
okay.
had five good games.
Okay.
His swing seems better. He seems to have a little bit better, a little more bounce in his step. I think he's past that.
Okay. It's an interesting one. I've never really thought about it much. How many good games does a guy have to have before you sort of declare that the slump
right,
is over?
The slump is over.
While we're on sort of the topic, similar kind of thing for me, the term hitting streak. I think we overuse that as a baseball society. When a guy's hitting three straight games, I don't think that's a hitting streak.
No.
I think he's hitting three in a row.
Right.
Dave Van Horn, the Hall of Fame announcer for the Marlins, who I had the real honor of working with for a couple of years, he used to always say he would not call it a hitting streak until it was seven games.
I was going to say a week.
Yeah, because
right.
he said it was a week.
Right.
And at that point, it's a streak. I don't know that I have that high of a standard for the thing. But for me, I want to see at least five before I refer to it as a streak.
At least five, right.
Yeah, that would be my own personal. I feel like we've gotten very liberal with the use of hitting streak. As a term.
Right.
You could say, hey, he's hitting four in a row. He's hitting three straight. He had a hit yesterday and he had a hit today if it's two. But I'm not about to call like a three in a row a streak. That's not a streak.
No.
Maybe by like the literal dictionary definition it is. It could be. But that's – when I think hitting streak, I think 56 games, right? That's like the first
that's
thing that pops into my mind. Yeah, that's a streak. So, like, if the guy has a single on Monday, a single on Tuesday, and a double on Wednesday, I'm not saying he's got a hitting streak.
Right.
He's just hitting three straight games.
Will Middlebrooks has had two very interesting nine-game streaks this year.
Yes, he has.
One hit in nine straight games twice, which is very unusual. One of those streaks, he had two hits in one game, which is a very unusual streak.
Very weird.
Weird.
He's had an interesting year. And, of course, yesterday, a part of the interestingness, I don't know that I've ever seen that before. I've watched a lot of baseball games. You've watched way more than I have. But a guy basically chasing down a foul pop.
Right.
And gets over towards that on-deck circle. And they have so much crap in the on-deck circle right. these days, right? I just sounded very old. But, you know, everybody's trying to get out of the way, which is great. But then, you know, he slips on the bat or whatever it was in the on-deck circle. It looked really bad. They're saying, hey, maybe it's not awful, which is good. But we'll see tomorrow when we meet with Pat Murphy before the game. But that's a weird one right
there.
That
could have really been bad. And there were several things that were interesting to me because the number 8 hitter was up, and they did not have a batter in the on-deck circle. Normally in that situation, if the hitter in the on-deck circle sees the ball popped over there, he'll sort of take his responsibility to remove the bats. Well, there was no hitter in the on-deck circle, and also the Diamondbacks have their on-deck circle instead of being out in the field where most teams have it. They have it right by the cusp of their dugout steps, and it's a little bit unusual, and it's just like everything just sort of worked in a bad situation for Will Middlebrooks. He's lucky. I mean, he could have stepped flush on one of those bats and broken that ankle.
Yeah, and that doesn't appear to be the case at all, which is great. But
right.
I don't even know if there's anything you can do about it. I don't know if there's really anybody you can be angry at
no.
about it. But what a weird, weird deal.
But a lot of times, if there's a pop-up over the on-deck circle, you'll see the other team's hitter or whatever. They'll just sort of grab the bats and move them out of the way and get out of the way.
Yeah.
There was nobody out there yesterday. The pitcher was the next – or the they were, you know, pinch hitter – but they were sort of hiding him from what are we going to do. There was nobody there to remove the bats.
That's fluky. Definition of fluky.
Definition.
Hey,
right.
By the way, remember when we showed the Matt Kemp leadoff home run?
Yes.
And we were talking about that, and I said that was our Supercuts cut of the game. I want to remind everybody that at Supercuts, they pay attention to every detail. The cut, the lines, the hot towel finish, so you can feel sharp, clean, and ready to go. Find a Supercuts near you at supercuts.com. All right, so a 6-4 loss to the Diamondbacks yesterday. All six of the first six Arizona batters to reach end up scoring. Will Middlebrooks has the weird injury. Pat Murphy said he'll be evaluated today. Doesn't look like a long-term thing. Two homers from Norris. Matt Kemp, a leadoff home run. And the Padres take 2 out of 3 from the Diamondbacks as they get ready to take on Seattle tomorrow night and Wednesday afternoon. Now, Wednesday is a 12:40 game. It's a way back Wednesday. And not only is it a way back Wednesday, which means we get to see those old late 80s uniforms again, but also after the game out at the park at the park, you've got Little John. That's coming up. You've got Little John coming up at the park afterwards. Bill, I know you're a big fan. He is doing a live post-game DJ set, so get your tickets now at Padres.com/WBW, Padres.com/WBW. It is a way back Wednesday, the complete throwback experience during the game. It's at 12:40 against Seattle, and after the game, Little John will be doing his thing right there at the park at the park. We'll take a break when we come back. Corey Brock of MLB.com will join us. We'll talk to him about Pat Murphy and the interim skipper getting settled in.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back. Padres Social Hour presented by United Airlines. Day off for the pods. And then tomorrow, first of two against Seattle. Ian Kennedy will be out on the mound at 7:10 Wednesday, the day game, way back Wednesday, 12:40, first pitch for the Padres and the Mariners. And that is it for the home schedule prior to the All-Star break, which is absolutely crazy. Pat Murphy, of course, is the interim manager, and he continues to sort of get settled in. Corey Brock, who, of course, covers the team for MLB.com, wrote about Pat Murphy today on Padres.com. You can check it out. You can also follow Corey on Twitter, if you don't already, at Follow the Padres. He joins us now to talk about this this profile he wrote on Pat Murphy. What are your observations so far on him, Corey? It's been sort of a little bit of a fun challenge, I think, for those of us around the team to try and understand him as much as we can in the limited amount of time that we've had around him.
Yeah, hey, Jesse. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a fascinating experiment, the interim manager. And I don't know, and I don't mean anything but disparaging by experiment. It's just because you don't see this happen very often throughout the landscape of sport, really. And it's been kind of fun to watch him kind of assimilate himself into what's going on in the Padres clubhouse, and it's really not, you know, it's not the in-game stuff, really. It's wanting to pull your pitcher, it's managerial decisions, but really it's learning the personnel and having them learn you. So, you know, this is going to be an ongoing process. I did an interview earlier today, and someone asked me, you know, what this has been like these first 2 weeks. And I said, well, I guess if you were giving out grades, you'd give it an incomplete, only because, you know, this is sort of a fluid situation. So it's been kind of interesting to watch Pat go about this, to try and learn the players, for them to learn him. It's going to be an ongoing process between now and the end of the year. And, you know, it's one of those careful what you wish for situations. Sure, Pat, I had aspirations to be a big league manager, not under these circumstances, given Buddy's situation. But once he's here now, he's got an awful lot on his plate.
Certainly. You used the word assimilate a couple of moments ago, and I want to jump on that because Bill and I were having this conversation yesterday on the show, too, just about how, I don't want to say awkward, but how just like strange of a situation it must be to come in and you're really the only new guy at that point. It's not like the start of spring training when there's a bunch of new people around and everybody's sort of trying to get to know one another. Like, the clubhouse has been established. The dynamic was what it was with Buddy Black as the manager, and now all of a sudden you're this lone wolf sort of coming into their den, I guess.
Yeah, you know, certainly, and Pat was around a lot during spring training. There's several guys in that clubhouse who have played for him in El Paso. But, yeah, you're kind of like a stranger in the room and a lot of eyes on you, you know, as to what you're going to do, how you're going to conduct yourself, how you're going to handle the personnel, how you're going to handle the in-game component. It's a fascinating, like I said, experiment. Again, that's the best word I can come up with. But, you know, it's so different and so unique because we just don't see this. I mean, we're talking about a franchise, Jesse, where Bud Black was here, what, 8-plus years. It's the only manager I've ever covered since I've been covering the team since 2007. And then suddenly, you know, abruptly, you have a situation where a guy walks in and it's like, hey, I'm calling the shots. Well, that's a big change, especially for a clubhouse now that's a lot different than it has been my 8 previous seasons. You have veteran guys, Matt Kemp, Justin Upton, James Shields, guys with significant major league service time, who are really probably watching this with a very interesting eye to see how it goes.
Well, I mean, managers here, you had either Bochy or Black for 2 decades. I mean, there's only been, before Pat, there were only two managers over 2 decades. So.
And Bill, how insane is that? Even if we expand beyond baseball, we just don't see this happen anymore.
Right.
I mean, there's so much turnover in sport now for whatever reasons. Money in the game, depending on whatever sport, TV contracts, impatient front office, fan base. We just don't see guys hanging on the jobs anymore. It's kind of like players, Jesse, who play their entire career in one city. I mean,
sure.
That's kind of a lost and forgotten breed.
You know what Pat really reminds me of? And, I mean, this is a military reference, so if we got any military people out there, he reminds me a little bit of a field first in the Army or a chief petty officer, that he comes in, he has to learn the people that he's leading while they're learning him, and there are a couple different aspects to it. He can be funny. He can be tough. He has to be resilient. At the same time, he has to figure out in short order the personalities of the men he's commanding. It's a very unusual position to be in.
Well, and then you got to manage the game. I mean, on top of all that, you have the in-game stuff. And certainly Pat, you know, is surrounded by a very not only capable, but a knowledgeable and very talented coaching staff. And we don't need to name all of them, but these guys have been here for a while and they're very good at what they do. So, you know, I know Pat's leaning on all those guys. But you're right, Bill. The things that are asked of him and what's required to be a major league manager, the list is lengthy. And I'm sure he's discovering that. I think he knew that was going to be the case. But I'm sure there's a few things that have surprised him along the way.
Corey Brock is with us. He's on Twitter, of course, at Follow the Padres. Wrote today about Pat Murphy and his transition into being the Padre interim manager. And one of the guys you spoke to about this was Glenn Hoffman, the Padre third base coach, who himself was an interim manager with the Dodgers in 1998. So he's got all the perspective needed, I guess, for this situation.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I'd kind of forgotten about that initially, Jesse, and I thought, you know what, Hoffy, Big Hoffy, would be a great guy to talk to about this because he went through the exact same thing, you know, where they the Dodgers had blew out their manager. I believe it was Bill Russell at the time, and brought Glenn up from AAA, just kind of like Pat Murphy came up from AAA, and he managed a team. I think Hoffy took over like June 21st, so it's kind of the same time frame. And you know, this is kind of the specific challenges you face when you're dropped into a room. And you know, Hoffy mentioned a few things. It's funny when I say Hoffy, I always think Trevor, but yeah, I call him Big Hoffy. So Big Hoffy, you know, he said one of the things he really leaned on was the veteran players who sort of knew how to, I think, kind of how to police the room, assess the situation, and understand that, yeah, maybe this guy is not necessarily over his head by any means, but is going into a new kind of situation. And he said those veteran players helped him out a lot. And I'll be curious to watch this moving forward if guys like James Shields, Matt Kemp, that they help Pat Murphy along the way and kind of help him. Because he's, you know, the players kind of police themselves, and I don't mean police in the term where they're ruling with a heavy hand, but you know, it's the players' clubhouse. And going back to spring training, Bud Black really leaned on and impressed upon James Shields and Matt Kemp to be leaders with this team, which is rare for guys who are in their first year with the team. So it'll be fascinating to watch. But yeah, Big Hoffy had some great perspective on the challenges that a new manager faces.
All right, Corey Brock, MLB.com, on Twitter at Follow the Padres. Check out the story. Very interesting stuff on Pat Murphy today on Padres.com. Appreciate the time on the off day, Corey, and enjoy your evening.
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, appreciate it. Corey Brock of MLB.com. Have you heard of Cody Anderson, by the way, for the Indians, the pitcher?
Yes.
Most people probably have not. He made his major league debut 8 days ago. And it was a good debut, by the way. 7 2/3 innings, didn't allow any runs. That's a great major league. Not quite Brian Matt's territory, like with the Mets
right. Yesterday.
But nonetheless, a really nice debut. Well, meanwhile, 8 days after making his major league debut, Cody Anderson is perfect through six innings against Tampa Bay.
Is that right?
Yeah, right now. Perfect through six.
Wow. You know, it's interesting to me that so many times you'll see a young pitcher get called up and their first game, they will just be magic. They'll throw zeros and everything. And then their next game, everybody has had a chance to look at film of what they're doing because in this day and age, right, it's all there. And the next time out, it's like, okay, we've seen this. You know, we're not going to bite at the slider low and away. We're going to wait for the first ball fastball and pounce on it.
Well, it's funny you say that because there was a really interesting article over the weekend in USA Today about pitcher-batter matchups.
Right.
And what they mean, right? So you'll often hear on a telecast or something like that, in his career, you know, this guy is a 3-for-13 against Ian Kennedy with two strikeouts and a homer, or whatever it is. And do those really mean anything? So we'll talk about that when we come back, because obviously, as you said, generally speaking, the more you get to know or the more you get to see a guy, the more difficult it is for him to fool you. But some really interesting points. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Also, more of your questions and comments on Twitter. You can use the hashtag PadresSH. I see more trade deadline questions coming in. That's been the big thing in the last week or so. And understandably,
right.
It's day-to-day, man. It's day-to-day. We'll see how it all shakes out in the next couple of weeks. But a huge, huge, huge road trip for the Padres coming up after these two games against Seattle. As your hometown pet retailer, Petco's proud to partner with the Padres in Petco Park. Thank you, San Diego, for sharing in our passion for pets and baseball. Petco, the power of together. So we'll take that break, come back, and we'll talk about those pitcher batter matchups and what they do or do not mean. Padres Social Hour on an off day.
We're back to the show that gives you everything San Diego Padres. It's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back to the AMR studio at Petco Park with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Thanks to Corey Brock of MLB.com for joining us. We were talking about Pat Murphy with him, and you've got a theory on something, don't you?
I do, and the Matt Kemp to leadoff position.
Yeah.
I think when you're a leader and you're coming into something, and everybody's sort of watching what you're going to do. I think Matt Kemp, part of that, while it made sense, it put Pat Murphy's stamp on this club. That was the first real move that Pat Murphy made, and and it was sort of like, this is my ball club. This is what I'm going to do.
I think there's something to that, and it's an interesting point. And whether that was the intention or not, it certainly looks that way.
Right.
And which might be just as good. It's a really, really interesting point. We got some tweets coming in. I think I got one. Let's do a tweet. We've been ignoring the tweets a little bit.
Absolutely.
I apologize. Eduardo, I believe, is the tweet I want to get to. And Eduardo wants to talk trade deadline. I had mentioned this, right? And so he says, if the Padres are five games out of first at the trade deadline, should they be buyers or sellers, and who would they get or get rid of?
I think that really they have to look at how many games they are out of the wild card and take that into consideration.
Well, he's saying just five out of first.
Five out of first.
So if they're five out of first.
In the division.
Yeah.
I think, though, but you've got to also look at where they are in the wild card.
Yeah, but I'm saying, here, I'll make it real easy, Eduardo. Okay. If the Padres are five games out of first place at the trade deadline, they're buying. They're buying.
Right.
There's no question
they're
still
in it. Right. They're still in it.
It's a no-brainer at that point.
Right.
It's a no-brainer. If they're five games out of the wild card, I think they're buying.
If they're five with a wild card, it will also depend on how many teams have to climb over to get to the wild card.
That's fair. But yeah, no, certainly five games out of first place, they're buying. As for who they would get, I mean, look, you know, Ken Rosenthal this weekend, he mentioned a shortstop. He mentioned a left-handed bat. Certainly you would have to think a starting pitcher is part of that, although who knows, you know, what happens between now and the trade deadline with Brandon Morrow or Josh Johnson. But I don't think there's a team out there that's in it that wouldn't want to improve, you know, their starting pitching. Everybody wants to. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that could happen.
Quite honestly, in my book, shortstop is not their biggest problem right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. Keep rolling Barmas out there.
Right. Yeah. Barmas is 2 points shy of 300. So,
yeah.
I mean, and he's hit like over 380 since the start of June.
He's had a great month.
Right. He's had a really good month. And he's been solid in the field, too. That's not their biggest problem.
All right, let's change subjects for a moment. I had mentioned this, the hitter-batter stuff, right? Good story, USA Today over the weekend about past performance. And so sometimes you hear, right, on a telecaster, look, I'm doing the game on radio tomorrow, right, with Scanlon. Ted's going to be off tomorrow night. So you'll hear me at some point maybe say something like, oh, in his career, Logan Morrison is X for Y against Ian Kennedy with four homers or something like that. And you'll think to yourself, well, does that really matter? Does that mean anything tonight, you know, as he steps into the box to face Ian Kennedy? And so the story really looked at all different areas of baseball and how teams use that information or don't use that information. So a couple of things to pass on. Let me start with Mike Matheny, the manager of the St. Louis Cardinals, and obviously they're leading the world in victories right now. He said they never look at that. Never. He says what he looks at only is the last 10 to 15 games for a particular pitcher or a hitter, because he says that the current form that somebody is in is what's relevant to him, not something that may have happened, you know, 4 years ago or even 2 months ago.
I agree with that.
That's very interesting. I kind of do, too, to be completely honest. Tim Tuffle, the Mets' third base coach, he does their defensive alignments and shifts and everything like that. He says they look at everything. They have lifetime spray charts for guys, but they also have short-term spray charts for guys, and that way they can tell if there's something off. Some guys will be consistent over the course of their big league career, and the spray charts will be what they were his rookie season as they are in his 10th season. Other guys will have different approaches this year than maybe they did in the past, so they're looking at both the lifetime spray chart when they're doing their shifts and also their current spray chart from this season, which also makes a lot of sense.
There are some occasions where there are some hitters who can't hit certain pitchers. There are some hitters that are really good, but you would really it has to be a really weighted number one way or the other.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. It can matter. Like you said, sometimes there are guys that just hate to see a pitcher or love to see a pitcher. You'll often hear, hey, I just have trouble picking the ball up out of his hand, that kind of thing. So there are definitely times that it is relevant.
And yes, and like Tony Gwynn used to – there, Omar Olivares, he could not get a hit off of him to save his life. He said, anybody else, I can pick up the ball with him. I can't see it. And then he's got this late delivery that I don't pick the ball up. And he was like 0 for 13 against him.
It's crazy.
Right. And he admitted, I cannot hit this guy.
Never strikes out against anybody, but he just can't hit
this guy
at
all. Right. Yeah. And then he wasn't really a very good, you know, everybody else didn't have problems with him.
Hmm. It's funny.
It's funny how that works. And there are guys matchups like that.
Jake Lamb, who was here with Arizona over the weekend, he has trouble. And small sample size, 9 at-bats. But Tyson Ross, Jake Lamb against Tyson Ross now, 0-for-9
right.
with 8 strikeouts.
Right.
That one is relevant to me. Like that jumps off the page.
Those numbers like that are relevant. And you'll see them every once in a while. Yeah. I think Adrian Gonzalez, I can't remember the pitcher right now, but he was like 1-for-19 against one pitcher.
Yeah.
And he just knew. And they gave him a day off one time because he was up against this guy. And he was saying, yeah, he'd like to play every day. But if I play against this guy, I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And it gets into their head, too. They know what's
That's
going.
Part of it.
Right.
That's the psychology of it. Andrew Miller, the relief pitcher, the lefty, he was quoted in this article, too, and he was pretty dismissive of the whole thing because of his own career. And it was somebody on the Nationals that had numbers against him. And he's like, no, that's not relevant because most of those at-bats came in 2008, 9, and 10 when I was a starter with the Marlins. He goes, now I'm a reliever. I'm a totally different pitcher than I was then. So you got to go case by case. You got to really think about it. But there are obviously going to be ones that jump off the page.
And you
got to
look at the circumstances, too.
Yeah, no, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, I found it interesting. I think, look, from like a broadcast standpoint, it's fun to pass those things along every once in a while because they're interesting. But do they mean anything, you know, to the guy in the batter's box or the guy on the mound? Sometimes maybe. Oftentimes, probably not. Right.
And it's like the sabermetrics. I think at times too much are made of those stats. What you see, you know, like the old-time scout, like Coach Welke, Don Welke, it's what you see often is more important than what you can read.
I would say you marry those things together. That's what I would say. And, you know, knowing the balance of one or the other is not necessarily the easiest thing to do. But, yeah, you've got to put all of that stuff together. All right, interesting. We'll take a break when we come back. I'm going to replay an interview we did also over the weekend, Friday night. Victor Espinoza, the jockey for American Pharoah, the Triple Crown winner. He was here when Ben Higgins was filling in for me, when I was filling in for Mr. Enberg on the TV. So we'll play that interview for you if you missed it with Victor Espinoza when we come back. We've got a home run derby rules update to talk about. I've also got a replay rant in store for later on in this show. And in addition to all of that, you can continue to tweet at us using the hashtag PadresSH. Do you know an All-Star mom? Well, Arm & Hammer and OxiClean, the official laundry detergent and stain fighter of Major League Baseball, are going to recognize an All-Star mom and send her and her family to the 2015 All-Star Game in Cincinnati. So go to allstarmom.com and tell us what makes your mom so special. Take a break, come back, and Victor Espinoza when we return.
Welcome back to the AMR studio. Live inside Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
Told you a few minutes ago that Cody Anderson of the Indians had a perfect game through 6 innings against Tampa Bay, and the former Indian Grady Sizemore homered with 1 out in the 7th inning to break it up. A Grady Sizemore home run in 2015 with 1 out in the 7th inning breaks up Cody Anderson's bid for a perfect game. Oh, well, haven't had a perfect game since 2012. Thank you, Jose Tabata.
Okay, that's right.
Or was it 13?
No,
I might have been 13.
You got me on that one. When you said 2012, it's like, holy cow.
I know there wasn't one last year. There were like 3 in the one season. I think it was 13.
You see who got released over the weekend?
Blooper's getting very nervous about time.
Okay.
Very nervous about time. No, I was right the first time. 2012 was
Tabata got released.
The last perfect week. Yes, I did see that. Yeah, yeah. What can you do?
We're making.
How nervous are you, Blooper? Scale of 1 to 10.
7?
Like oh, that's like that's your normal operating level.
We can push it a little bit here.
Can we go to this?
All right, so Friday night, Victor Espinoza was here, the Triple Crown winning jockey of American Pharoah. Ben was filling in for me, and here is their conversation in case you missed
it. 3 straight starts in a row doesn't get any better than what our next guest here on Padres Social Hour did, winning the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness Stakes, and the Belmont Stakes aboard American Pharoah. We are joined by jockey Victor Espinoza, and Victor, absolutely, applause.
Thank you.
It's been so long, 1978. I mean, what were you feeling like when you crossed the line at Belmont and that was it? It had finally been done.
Seriously, huh? I didn't even have a feeling in there. I was numb for a minute, but it was just incredible that I'd be able to get it done for like my third strike. But it's just an amazing thing that I be able to do it in 37 years, huh? I think it was waiting for me.
It's amazing. You said third chance, war emblem in 2002 and then California Chrome last year, you probably were wondering, well, I'll never get an opportunity like that again. For it to come the very next year aboard a great horse like American Pharoah, you must be thanking your lucky stars. That doesn't happen for jockeys every day.
No, not at all. And I probably was one of the luckiest jockey ever. They have it basically the third time and be able to win it. It's just one of those things that I never even think about it, and you know, not even dream or haven't even dreamed to be able to be in that position.
Can you compare horses? Is it fair to ask you?
No, it's not. Yeah, it is kind of fair.
What's the best horse? Yeah.
You know, as of right now, the best horse probably is American Pharoah.
Okay. Right yeah. now? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I know, don't know if we'll see him out at Del Mar, but I know the meet is coming up. Every time the fair comes back around, you know the racing season is just around the corner. So I know we'll see you, Victor, out at Del Mar. You race out there every year. They're looking forward to coming back again?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm always, like, you know, prepare myself and train hard for Del Mar because there is one of their, you know, the track that I've always been lucky in there, and I always win a lot of races, and I always find the right horse for the Kentucky Derby, for at least for the Triple Crown. That's how I find California Chrome and Del Mar and American Pharoah. But Del Mar is always, it's a fun meet to be around there, you know, and it's just so many people that go there, and a lot of followers, and a lot of, you know, people like they support the racing, and they go there just to have fun, and it's so close too, you know. But over here, it's fun, too.
So don't think that you can just go to the window and bet every horse that Victor's on, because the odds are
they're not all American.
They're going to be, you know, 3-5 and things like that. He's not going to be on a 15-1 horse for very long.
All right, Victor, you are on the Cholula hot seat right now on Padres Social Hour, and you're going to be throwing the first pitch out today. I don't know if you had a chance to talk to any of the players yet, but I'm sure you met some of them last season. Compare the training regimen. I don't think people understand the training that jockeys go through. I mean, they think about baseball players and basketball players and football players as professional athletes. And, Kurt, I don't know if you know this. To keep in shape for jockeys almost puts the rest of them to shame.
Yeah, it is hard work. It is a lot of training. And not just the training. The biggest challenge for a jockey and myself is that, you know, really can't eat much. You can't eat whatever you want because, you know, the weight problem. And it doesn't matter how small or tall you are. It's just the weight and it's a challenge. And then working out every day. I mean, 5 days a week, no matter what, you have to work out. And deal with that. A lot of things going on. Riding is not, like, it looks easy. But it's a lot of details going through and the riding thing. It's like anything else, any sport. Like, you know, all the players right here, there is not just throw the ball and that's it, they're done, or hit it. You know, it's a lot of details to go in there. But the players only know what details are going there, like we do, you know, and as a rider.
So what's a typical day for you working out, at least in the off season when you're getting ready to race?
Well, and like in the morning, I go and I lift weights, mm-hmm. you know, for a couple hours, and then around 5 o'clock, I run up the hill, I do cardio, and sometimes I have a best like weight like 15, 20 pounds, and then I run up the hill.
So 5 o'clock, a.m. or
p.m. p.m. because okay. It's not too hot.
That's
know?
My kind of workout.
And
yeah.
in between, he gets like 2 bites of steaks and a piece of broccoli. Exactly. And that's about it.
Kurt. And a carrot.
Yeah, can you imagine that? That now, see, you're working out's fine if you get to eat afterwards, but Victor doesn't even get to enjoy it. So I mean, you're, what, 43 years old now yeah. as a jockey? I mean, how long are you going to keep going after this until you can just kind of let yourself have the big steak and the baked potato now?
I know, right? As to this point, I had no plans. I every time I make plans, never happens. So I just go day by day, and I think when the time is up, overnight, I'll be like, okay, that's it.
As long as they keep giving you American Pharoahs to ride, you're gonna keep riding.
Then I keep riding.
There you go.
Why would you go away? So, any nerves about the first pitch? Any advice you get from Kurt here?
Well, yeah, now I am because you guys put me a little more pressure.
You know, everybody. So you're going to feel more pressure tonight going to the mountain than you felt getting on American Pharoah at the Belmont.
Thanks to you guys.
Oh, my goodness.
So what's life been like for you since the Belmont? Now, you know, obviously, you know, going around, you've probably been doing a lot more interviews, talking to people, building up the sport of horse racing. What's life been like for you since winning the Triple Crown?
Busy. I have more work today now than before. Before, I used to have a lot of free time. Now, I had no free time. I've been doing a lot of things, pretty much, for after the race. For, like, the first 10, 6 or 8 days, I probably sleep a couple hours. Because I've been around a lot of the shows that want me to go. And also, the most fun thing that I probably, do it is the CMT Awards for the country music. That was a lot of fun. And in Nashville, Tennessee, they wanted me to go there to present an award for them. And I was something that I never, done. And it was, quite experience for me.
They think jockeys wear cowboy boots.
That's fantastic.
So listen to this. I played in a golf tournament with Stevie Cawthon. And now I'm sitting next to this guy.
Awesome.
Wow.
That's pretty good,
that
huh?
That is amazing. That is
two
amazing.
Triple Crown winners.
Well,
lucky
awesome
year.
Now the
exactly.
Now the Country Music Awards can be your second favorite appearance after Padres Social Hour. Victor, thanks for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, guys. And you should follow me on Facebook.
Congratulations.
Okay, follow it. What's Facebook? Victor Espinosa. Follow
yeah.
Victor
what about Espinosa. Twitter? Do you have a
and
Twitter?
And Twitter, too, and Instagram.
Absolutely. All the platforms.
There you go.
You and also, you guys need to vote for American Pharoah. This is the first time they ever
a
horse has been nominated. For the ESPYs.
ESPY Awards.
The ESPY Awards.
Coming
yeah
up next month.
Yep, yep.
A horse for
that's
the just, athlete of the year.
Yeah.
Why not?
That's the first time ever.
I'd like to see him go on stage.
Why
and
not?
Accept the award.
All right, Victor, you have been on the Cholula hot seat. You are now off the Cholula hot seat.
Thank
but
you.
Cholula hot sauce will elevate the flavor of your food with its delicious blend of unique peppers and authentic spices. Cholula, the flavorful hot sauce with the iconic wooden cap and proud partner of the San Diego Padres. We'll get back, talk a little more Padres baseball. Again, thanks to Victor Espinosa for stopping by.
You want some Padres talk?
We've got that.
Padres Social Hour returns now, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back. Padres Social Hour presented by United. We are running late. Not a lot of time to talk or Blooper will get nervous. But right, we got the Home Run Derby coming up, right, before the All-Star game in Cincinnati. The other day I was complaining about the Home Run Derby. Darklighter was here, and we were sort of going back and forth about how ridiculous it was, that they need to just blow the thing up, try it all new ways, and they kind of had. So now it's going to be a head-to-head challenge. So each round, instead of everybody just accumulating, it's one guy versus one guy, winner advances. Then one guy versus one guy, winner advances until you're down to the final two. Maybe more importantly than that, though, no longer is it a 10-out thing. You get 5 minutes, running clock, and you hit as many home runs as you can in the 5 minutes.
It's a lot better than it was because I thought it was terrible.
We'll see.
I thought it was one of the more boring things out there.
Yeah, I could last for like an hour, and then I was done. And
right,
I was like, okay, I've seen all the cool places a ball can land at this particular ballpark. That's what I'm interested in.
Right.
This should keep us tuned in a little bit longer. Speaking of tuning in for the All-Star game, remember, extraordinary moments happen every night in baseball, but on one night, they all happen in one place. So don't miss the 86th All-Star game. Coverage begins at 4 o'clock on Tuesday, July 14th, only on Fox. We'll take a break, come back, and wrap up Padres Social Hour right after this.
From start to finish, it's the best 60 minutes of Padres talk you'll find anywhere. Now, from the AMR studio, it's more of Padres Social Hour.
All right, wrapping things up on this off day with Bill Center. Padres and Mariners open up a two-game series tomorrow. Keith Olbermann on his show today had a big anti-replay rant. And he said, look, it's just taking too long, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to have the replay argument again because I feel like we have it every other day. And I still personally stand by getting it right is the most important thing.
Right.
Even if it does take a couple of minutes. But he did bring up something that I think is important for us to know and something to be aware of, which is that MLB is essentially lying to all of us about the amount of time these reviews take. Apparently, when they give you the official time of the review, they'll say, oh, it's a minute and 38. They're only counting from when the replay guy in New York is looking at the video until he's not anymore. So there's none of the waiting to see if they're going to review. There's none of the umpires walking over there. There's none of the call. It's not from the start of the delay till the end of the delay. And so something that might take 4.5 or 5
right
minutes is being reported as like 90 seconds.
Right.
Keep that in mind when you're seeing those numbers.
And I think those long ones are unfair to the pitcher.
I would say that is very true. Hey, this was was fun.
This was great.
Thanks to Bill Center. Thanks to Corey Brock. Thanks to Victor Espinoza. Thanks to Blooper. He was sensational today. 5:30 show tomorrow. Mike Grace will be hosting along with Randy Jones. We'll talk to you then.